Do you ever have a dream that you know you're in a dream? It's called lucid dreaming. In a moment, Robert Wagoner joins us, back with us, and we're going to talk about his work, Lucid Dreaming, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Robert Wagoner taught himself a simple method to become lucid or consciously aware in the dream state back in 1975, happened to be 6 years before the scientific evidence for lucid dreaming even emerged. During the next 40-plus years, he deeply explored lucid dreaming, discovered a way to directly connect with a knowledgeable and creative inner awareness. Besides his two acclaimed books on lucid dreaming, he co-edits an online magazine, Lucid Dreaming Experience, conducts online workshops with glidewing.com, and gives talks and workshops around the planet. Robert, welcome back, my friend. Hope all is well.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for having me.
Looking forward to this. And how are the books doing, Lucid Dreaming?
You know, they continue on selling very well. They're getting translated into many languages, French, German, Chinese. So they just keep going around the world.
Good for you. Take us back to 1975. What happened to you to begin to study lucid dreaming?
Right. So that year, I was a junior in high school, and I happened to be reading a book by Carlos Castaneda called Journey to Ixtlan. And Castaneda was a UCLA graduate student in anthropology who wanted to study psychotropic plants like peyote and things like that. And he found the shamanic teacher, Don Juan. And in this book, his shamanic teacher suggests to him that he find his hands in the dream state and realize he's dreaming. And there really wasn't a technique. And so I created my own little technique to find my hands in the dream. And within three nights of trying that technique, my hands popped right in front of my face as I was walking through my high school hallway, and I realized, oh my gosh, this is a dream. So that's what got me going in this world of lucid dreaming.
That's interesting you say that, because years ago, when I was having many different kinds of dreams myself, I always wondered, where are my body parts? You know, I kept saying to myself, are you just like you're in there, like remote viewing, where you're just, your consciousness is floating around in this dream, or you just can't see yourself? You know, in real life, your hands are waving, your feet are waving, you can see everything. In a dream, you're right, you really can't.
Right, right. And so that was interesting. In that very first lucid dream of mine, initially I saw my hands and realized I was dreaming. I stepped outside of the hallway, and I was looking at the brickwork of the administration building, and all of a sudden, the lucid dream got shaky, and I remembered that Don Juan had told Carlos to look back at your hands to stabilize the dream, if that happened. And at that moment, I became a little ball of light floating through the palm prints of my hand, which were now like giant Grand Canyons around me. And so you're right. I went from having a body to having no body and just being a bit of awareness. So that's the curious thing about dreaming and lucid dreaming. It can change that quickly.
So lucid dreaming, basically, if you had to give it a specific definition, would be what?
So a lucid dream is any dream in which you consciously realize within the dream that you're dreaming. Oftentimes you'll say, this is a dream. How can this be? This has to be a dream. And so you know it's dreaming. And once you know it's dreaming, then you can begin to make choices. You can decide what you want to do. You can even explore and experiment, do personal experiments and scientific experiments.
Sometimes you say, thank God it is only a dream.
Exactly, exactly.
When you lucid dream, how can you use it to better yourself?
Right. Lucid dreaming, it's like an open platform on which you can do basically whatever you want to do. So here's the value to lucid dreaming. You can use it to access creativity. You can use it for emotional healing. You can use it for physical healing. You can use it to engage this larger awareness, your unconscious mind or your larger self. And also you can use it to perform spiritual practices, because lucid dreaming has a many thousand year history in Buddhism and Native American and shamanic traditions, in Sufism and Taoism. So you can use it in all those different ways to explore, experiment, and just do incredible things.
That's pretty dramatic. You've had some lucid dreamers send in reports to you about their healing techniques through lucid dreaming, haven't you?
Right. I certainly have. And especially with my magazine, The Lucid Dreaming Experience, I get incredible stories of people who've used lucid dreaming for emotional healing and also for physical healing.
Give us an example or two, Robert, no names mentioned, of some of these healing practices from lucid dreaming.
Right. So in one of our recent issues, there's a young woman named Carolyn. She was planning to run a marathon. And so as part of that, she was on a 14-mile run. And at the 13-mile marker, suddenly her right knee pain was just unbearable. And she knew she had to stop and not cause herself any more damage. So she decided to become lucidly aware and try to heal her knee so she could continue with her marathon training. So later that week, she finds herself on the couch, and she looks to the right, and there's Dad. And then she looks to the left, and there's Dad.
Hmm.
And she thinks, wait a second, my dad's a twin, but wait. And then she realizes this has to be a dream. There's only one dad there. She becomes lucidly aware. She remembers she wants to heal her knees. And so if you can imagine, she puts her hand just an inch away from her knees, intending for them to be healed with healing energy.
In the dream, right?
In the lucid dream, knowing it's a dream. She intends for that healing energy to occur. And she says that when she wakes, her knees feel much, much better.
Amazing.
And within a day or two, she runs 16 miles and had no pain, not even a twinge.
You've seen this work. How does it work?
You know, it shows us the power of the mind to heal. And you see that in people who have deep hypnosis. Oftentimes they go to the dentist and the dentist will hypnotize them, or someone will hypnotize them so they feel no pain.
Right.
Or the women who are going to have a child but they can't use typical medicine, so they have a hypnotist work with the woman and hypnotize her, and then she has a child without pain or bleeding and all that sort of thing. So you really see the power of the mind. The beautiful thing, though, is in lucid dreaming, about 50% of the population reports spontaneous lucid dreams, whereas in deep hypnosis, boy, that's only 5 or maybe 10% of the population.
But does everybody have lucid dreaming? I mean, if we polled every caller who calls you next hour and asks them if they've ever had a lucid dream, do you think they'd all say yes?
You know, I think we're going to find that about 3 out of 10 would say no, but about 7 out of 10 would say, yeah, they've had at least one experience where they've realized that they're dreaming within the dream. And then there's what we call frequent lucid dreamers,
right,
people who report at least becoming lucid at least once a month, and that's about 25% of that dreaming population.
I've had lucid dreaming, Robert, but I haven't used it to my advantage for healing or anything like that. I just realize, oh, I'm in a dream here, and then I wake up generally. So my realization of the lucid dream is probably maybe a couple seconds long, but I realize it's definitely a lucid dream that I'm in it, but I don't take advantage of it. How come?
You know, a lot of us don't realize the potential. And because we don't know all the incredible things you can do, we just pop out of it. Sometimes some people get so excited when they become lucidly aware that they pop out. It's just like a circuit breaker. You get too excited and you break the circuit and wake up. But when you begin to realize what you can do, then you realize why you should stay in there and how you should go about achieving the goals that you want to achieve.
Because you can actually change the outcome of the dream when you know it's a lucid dream, can't you?
Oh, exactly.
You can definitely rewrite the script.
In fact, some lucid dreamers nowadays, they'll use their hands and they'll scroll the lucid dream backwards to a better point and then come up with a new response to a situation. So once you realize that you're dreaming, and if you know how, the sky's the limit. There's no limit to what you can do.
How would you categorize lucid dreaming in terms of importance compared to special dreams, of precognitive dreams, and things like that?
You know, you can use lucid dreaming to seek out precognitive information, but you're right. Sometimes we have big dreams, whether they're precognitive or telepathic or whatever, that just occur spontaneously. But the beautiful thing about lucid dreaming is once you learn that skill, then you have access to that every time you become lucidly aware.
That's amazing. It's very powerful, isn't it, if you know how
really
to use it?
Truly.
Do you do it often?
You know, what I tell people is normally, if I just let things go as they would, I'll have 2 to 3 lucid dreams a month. When I was back in my heyday, seeing how deep I could go, I got up to 30 lucid dreams a month. Some nights I'd have two or three lucid
dreams. That's a lot.
So, but that takes a lot of effort, and if I just kind of hang out, I'll have 2 to 3 lucid dreams a month.
I do recall it's kind of fun to know you're in a dream and you can't get hurt or anything like that.
Right. You can go flying. You can walk through walls. You can walk on water. You can do virtually anything. So it is a lot of fun. And actually, that's one of the problems, because sometimes it's so fun, you forget to do those important things that you wanted to do.
Exactly.
Like emotional healing or physical healing or accessing creativity.
And it ends too quickly, too, sometimes.
And that's very true. So there's ways of elongating the lucid dream, but you got to be ready when you see the symptoms to respond.
Now, have some people had health problems, they lucid dream, and nothing happened because they probably didn't know what they were doing?
Exactly. Some lucid dreamers, they've sought healing, like they'll find the lucid dream hospital and talk to the lucid dream doctor, but then they won't take any of his recommendations in the lucid dream. And it's interesting, it's almost comical, and then they wake up and they have no healing. So you see that they're being given good advice, but they even refuse to take it. So occasionally you'll see folks who for whatever reason, have no healing benefit in those lucid dream attempts.
What comes first, the lucid dream or the ability to want to create the lucid dream?
You know, I would say for most of us, the ability to want to create the lucid dream.
Yeah.
Some of us start off, you know, as children, spontaneously lucid dreaming. And there was a study in Germany by Ursula Voss where she studied children ages 6 to 19. And I believe like 20% of the 8-year-olds were already having spontaneous lucid dreams. But for most of us, we have to have that desire to have a lucid dream and to learn how to go about that process.
And of all the kinds of dreams that are out there, how would you categorize lucid dreaming? Way up there?
You know, lucid dreaming is definitely way up there because it opens up all the potential, all the possibilities of dreaming when you realize within a dream that you're dreaming.
It's fun, isn't it?
It's truly fun, and you can do virtually everything. So it's really one of those wonderful techniques, abilities that if people learn how to master, that they'll get so much benefit from. And that's why I love talking with you and others, just to explain the incredible potential that you'll find in lucid dreaming.
We're going to take calls next hour with Robert Wagoner about dreams. Do you interpret dreams too?
You know, occasionally you have to interpret dreams, especially if you're going to be a good lucid dreamer. So I'm happy to answer questions about that as well.
Okay. That's it. Now, why do some people, Robert, not remember their dreams? And I would say a lot of people don't remember their dreams.
You know, I think we live in a culture that really doesn't value dreaming. And so we're busy people. We wake up, we look at our phone, we check our emails and texts. And so we just devalue dreaming. But in cultures where people really care about dreaming, they pay attention, they remember, and all. So each of us, every night, we're having probably 5 or 6 dreams, spending 23% of the sleep state in dreaming, but you have to have a focus on that recall, because if you don't, within 10 or 15 seconds, the dream will disappear and you'll forget what you dreamt about.
Tell us again how you teach people to learn that they're in a lucid dream.
So there's a number of ways, but the way that I taught myself way back in 1975 was finding my hands.
And you did this on your own, basically?
Yep, I just created this because I knew about the power of suggestion. So before sleep, I'd look at my hands, the palm of my hands, while telling myself repeatedly over and over, quietly in my mind, Tonight in my dreams I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming. Tonight in my dreams I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming. I'd say that for about 5 minutes and fall asleep. On the third night of doing that, that's when I'm walking through my high school hallway and boom, my hands pop right in front of my face and I think, oh, my hands, this is a dream.
Huh.
Because I had made my hands the symbol that would help me recognize that I was dreaming. And once I saw that symbol of my hands, I was ready to go. I knew it was a dream.
Dream states, let's talk about general dream states for a moment, Robert, are very powerful. You can use them to solve problems. You can use them to communicate with people. I got to be very honest with you. Years ago, when I wanted to get things done professionally, I would concentrate on that individual who had the decision-making powers to decide what he was going to do with me, whether it was to buy some video or whatever I was doing. I would concentrate on that individual and go to sleep. And sure enough, like within a day or so, that person would end up calling or something would happen and he'd say, hey, you were on my mind. Let's do this project.
You know, that's lovely. I was out in Taiwan where my books have been published in Chinese. And on the very first night of the conference, a woman asked me, could lucid dreaming help her lose weight? And I asked her to explain, and she said she'd been trying to lose weight for decades and hadn't been able to lose weight. And I told her she didn't have to lucid dream. All she had to do was go to sleep that night and tell her larger self that it would provide a dream that would explain why she couldn't lose weight. And the next morning she came down and she told the entire class, last night I dreamt I was a puffer fish.
Huh.
And we all know a puffer fish is the kind of fish that gets bigger, it puffs up to protect itself, to defend itself.
And then it gets really small again when it's done.
And so she understood from that dream symbol that she couldn't lose weight because she was all puffed up to defend herself. And until she got over that feeling of a need to be defensive, she would never be able to lose weight.
Is dreaming part of the brain or is it outside of the brain?
It's definitely part of the brain, but is it the conscious mind or the unconscious mind or an integration of the two? I think it's really an integration of the two.
Interesting. I mean, with precognitive dreams, my daughter had one about 9/11. We didn't know what it was, but it was definitely that episode because she saw ash and dust falling from buildings while she was walking. And she said her boots were up to 6 inches and like snow dust.
Wow.
But what creates the precognitive dream, which is pretty darn accurate?
Right. I know so many people had 911 dreams in advance of 911, including myself. And I think that's when you get into a larger framework of either a collective unconscious or a universal mind or something like that, because some of these experiences are just too hard to explain without positing an idea like that.
We're going to come back in just a moment and talk more about dreams, lucid dreaming with Robert Wagoner. His couple books, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, and then also Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple. He's got a couple of websites all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Next hour, we will take your phone calls with him, share your dreams, talk about lucid dreaming, talk about how you use the power of a dream. He'll even do a little interpretation of a dream. Remember that old dream we've all had? Our feet keep running and running, but we don't go anywhere. What the heck does that mean? And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you with Robert Wagoner as we talk about lucid dreaming and dreams in general. What kinds of dreams have you had, Robert, beyond lucid dreaming? Have you had precognitive dreams and things like that?
Right. You were mentioning 911 earlier. About 6 months before 911 occurred, I began to have a series of extraordinary dreams. In fact, in one of them, a dream figure said the words 911.
Oh, geez.
But of course, at that time, 911 is an emergency phone call. But as it got to August, I told my wife that something's happening, something's going to happen, like Pearl Harbor or the start of the Great Depression. And she asked me, well, what do we do? And I said, that's the weird thing. It really doesn't involve us. It's going to happen out there in the world. And so when it finally did happen, boy, I felt kind of a sense of...
It hit you, didn't it?
Oh, it is just really powerful. Just very powerful.
Truly did. Back to lucid dreaming. What do neurologists say about dreams, for example?
You know, that's one of the beautiful things about lucid dreaming is that it has a very solid scientific structure behind it. Back in the late 70s, there were two different researchers, Keith Hearn in England and Stephen LaBerge at Stanford, and they both realized that you could bring a dreamer or a lucid dreamer into the sleep lab and put rapid eye movement polygraph pads on their eyes that would record their movement of their eyes while they're dreaming. And they told them, when you become lucidly aware, move your eyes left to right 8 times, and that'll be such a strange signal on the rapid eye movement polygraph pad readout that it'll provide evidence for lucid dreaming. And so that's how the evidence for it emerged. And since that time, there's been other researchers who've put EEG skull caps on lucid dreamers, had them signal with their eyes they're lucidly aware, and then they got their brain activity during the lucid dreaming state, which showed that the cerebral cortex, or the newer part of the brain, suddenly parts of it begin to light up, which is very unusual in normal dreaming. But that's what happens in lucid dreaming, because now you're a self who needs to make decisions and decides what they want to do in the lucid dream.
Robert, do you think we'll ever get technology where you can hook up electrodes to somebody's brain and then they fall asleep and dream, and you could then see it on a screen, the dream, like a movie?
You know, we're moving further into understanding actual neural networks of dreaming. And so they'll give mice a new type of activity, a new kind of maze they have to figure out in order to get their food reward. And then when they study the neural patterns of the mice as they're sleeping, they can see that, oh, now they've made these changes in their dreams. And so it's really fascinating to think that maybe someday we'll get to that level where we can actually know what people are dreaming about just by watching a certain brain activity or certain neural activity.
Wouldn't that be amazing, though, if you could literally see the pictures of the dream up on a screen as they're dreaming? It might be one of the highest rated movies out there.
It'd be definitely dreamland. That would just be incredible.
But we might be able to get that way. I mean, Elon Musk is talking about Neuralinks, putting in chips in people's brains and stuff like that. Who knows what capabilities they might have?
You really don't know. And it's also interesting to see that kind of lucid dreaming, the evidence for it came out around the same time that virtual reality and augmented realities were starting to get going in those very early years. And so it's kind of interesting to think of lucid dreaming as a kind of a type of virtual reality. But the interesting thing is, in a game like Fortnite or Minecraft, you know that someone coded it, and there's a limit to the software program. But I always ask people, in a lucid dream, who coded the lucid dream? And that's when you realize that you're interacting with your unconscious mind, your larger awareness, and it's profoundly deep. It seems infinite.
Sigmund Freud, the neurologist, was into dreams in a big way, wasn't he?
Right.
How did he get into that? What got him so fascinated by dreams?
You know, he went to Paris and saw a gentleman, Charcot, who hypnotized people in order to help them overcome physical limitations, like people who had a paralyzed leg. But when he hypnotized them, they were no longer paralyzed in their leg. And so Freud, seeing that, realized that the unconscious mind was extraordinarily powerful, and he realized the easiest way to access what was going on in the unconscious mind was having people tell them his dreams and working together to try to interpret those dreams. And oftentimes by doing that, then they'd have incredible revelations and realize what were the blocks and various difficult aspects in their life. So that's how he got started. The interpretation of dreams came out in 1899. That was 120 years ago.
Do you think that people like Leonardo da Vinci had special dreams in order to do what they did, or Nostradamus?
You have to assume so, because in dreaming, there's so much creativity just naturally occurring. In fact, there's a number of Nobel Prize winners who report that the solution to their scientific problem came to them in a dream. And so when you see these scientists saying that dreaming brought them creative ideas, and you begin to see the importance of how that connects us to something even larger than ourselves.
Robert, you, of course, know what astral projection is.
Right.
Is dreaming a little bit like that?
You know, sometimes people ask me if lucid dreaming is just another way of saying OBE or astral projection. And I think they differ. I tell people it's kind of like the difference between a house cat and a mountain lion. They're both felines, but other than that, they have a lot of differences. For example, in a lucid dream, you realize within a dream you're dreaming. But in an OBE, you might, like, let's say, have a heart attack, and now you're floating at the above the ceiling, looking at the doctors and nurses trying to get your heart going.
Right, in real life.
Right. So where is the realizing you're dreaming within the dream in that kind of scenario? But the issue is, as you get deeper into it, you realize that Robert Monroe, who is kind of the father of OBEs, he said that he thought the main difference was that in the OBE, the environment was stable. Things did not change. But in a lucid dream, if you think about something differently, if you don't like the color of that wall and want it to be purple, you just think it, make it happen. And so that's what Robert Monroe felt was the big difference. OBEs, you're in a stable environment. Lucid dreams, you're in a mentally generated or mentally constructed environment, and you change your mind and things change.
Where does remote viewing fit in with this?
You know, I think remote viewing, it's interesting. Once I was at an International Association for the Study of Dreams conference, and a scientist, I'm not going to bring up his name, he said that he received PAIR funding to do basically remote viewing and lucid dreams. And they had targets that they were to get. And once they concluded all the work, the research group said that, well, lucid dreaming, accessing the target image, was just as good as remote viewing, but they liked remote viewing better because people could just sit there and do it, you know, as they're sitting there in their easy chair. And so even though they were equally the same in terms of efficacy, it was just easier to deal with remote viewers who were sitting in a chair.
What about people, Robert, who have spiritual dreams or bizarre dreams? What are they doing?
You know, it just depends. There's what I would call legitimate spiritual dreams that are truly powerful, where people interact with spiritual figures. And there's some wonderful stories of people receiving healings or receiving information outside of their own knowing. But there's other times when people tell me dreams, and it makes me realize that they're actually dealing with what you might call the shadow, which Carl Jung called the denied, ignored, repressed aspects of the self. And so oftentimes those show up as shadow dreams in which you're being chased by a monster or the zombies appear or something like that. And those can be very powerful dreams, especially if you become lucidly aware and ask that monster, who are you or what do you represent? And oftentimes when you hear what it represents, then you have a real revelation, but you almost have to become lucid to have that. Mm-hmm. So spiritual dreams run the gamut. But some of them, I think, are just sometimes the psychological issues kind of taking a spiritual form.
Going back, who would you say is the best researcher dealing with dreams in the past?
Wow. That, you know, people have been talking about dreams since Aristotle. Even I think Aristotle reported a lucid dream. But we just have some wonderful researchers out there. But when it comes to lucid dreaming, Stephen LaBerge, he became kind of the father of lucid dream research and really opened it up so that people accepted it and began to see some of the potential. And that's what I've tried to do in my books, is open up even the broader potential of lucid dreaming.
Some people will cry in their dreams. How do they get so emotional?
You know, oftentimes one thing that researchers have discovered, that often in dreaming is sometimes when we have our highest heart rate, our highest respiration rate. Sometimes all sorts of neurochemicals are being sent throughout the body by what we're experiencing in the dream state. So it's not unusual. It might be, in fact, a way for the body to kind of reach equilibrium of some sort, that on deeper levels, the body knows we need certain neurochemicals in order to deal with whatever is going on in our life and creates dreams to produce those neurochemicals. But you're right. Sometimes we might wake up crying with tears in our eyes,
yeah.
Tears of joy, and also sometimes tears of grief or sadness.
There are some dreams that you have, and you thank God it was just a dream. What's a nightmare?
Right. And so you know, a nightmare and sometimes vivid dreams are just like that. You just feel convinced that it happened, and you feel stunned when you wake up, and it might take a few hours before you realize that thing that seemed so real a moment ago,
it wasn't.
Was just a dream. So all of that just shows, you know, the power of the inner mental experience of dreaming, and what an effect it can have on a person.
But what creates the nightmare?
You know, oftentimes
it's not the pizza.
But it might be all sorts of energy collected. You might feel stress at work, and you can't express your stress, or you can't deal with it, and then it gets symbolically portrayed and represented in the dream state. Or it might be some fear or concern that you have that's kind of wandering around in the back of your mind that you might not have really expressed, and all of a sudden it comes shooting forward. But oftentimes I feel that all dreams come in the way of health and wholeness. And that was a statement that Jeremy Taylor, who was a dream worker, would say, that all dreams came in the way of health and wholeness. So even those nightmares are coming to make us aware of something, and hopefully we'll respond in a good way that we benefit from that.
There was a movie, gosh, I can't remember the name of it, where people could dream to enter somebody else's dream and try to kill them. It was, you know, one of these sci-fi type movies.
Right.
And what they would try to do is, you know, in the dream, scare the guy to have a heart attack or something like that. And he
right.
would. And he would. Is that conceivable? Can you enter someone else's dream?
You know, it's interesting. There was a wonderful book written by Montague Allman and called Dream Telepathy. And that book is about the NIH studies that were done at the Maimonides Sleeping Lab in Brooklyn on dream telepathy. And they came up with some wonderful results on dream telepathy. So if you have dream telepathy where one person can influence another person's dreaming, then it really does make you wonder, you know, what are the boundaries? Where are the... Are there any actually in the dream state? So it's interesting field to think about and play around with.
I had a caller years ago who kept dreaming of a girl that he was falling in love with in his dream. And this was all one-sided. And he was dreaming and dreaming and dreaming. Well, one day he's at the airport, and coming down the tarmac is this girl, the same girl in his dream.
Right.
And he goes up to her and says, I'm sorry, I have to do this. I have to introduce myself to you. I've been dreaming about you for 6 months. You're incredible. And she said, I've been dreaming about you, too. And off they went.
Oh, good grief. Well, that's
how in the world does that happen?
It's fascinating. In our magazine, The Lucid Dreaming Experience, a young guy who's an engineer on the West Coast, he sent in a lucid dream. He became lucidly aware, and he was looking at this man in a turban who he knew was his spiritual teacher. And the spiritual teacher asked him in the lucid dream, what is my name? What is my name? And this engineer, he kept thinking, I know this guy, I know this guy. And finally, from somewhere, he announces, Nanak. And the spiritual teacher shakes his head, you know, and smiles and says, yes, you're right, and then gives him advice about his spiritual life. And so this young man, he wakes up and he Googles Nanak, and he finds that Nanak was one of the founders of the Sikh religion, almost 2,000 years ago.
I was going to say, does anybody ever dream about Jesus?
And you'll occasionally have those kind of experiences as well, where people dream about Jesus or one of the disciples or some of the figures from the Old Testament. So you'll have all those kind of fascinating dream reports, and it just makes you wonder, where does all this come from? And are we connected across time and space? You know, is that evidence for some reincarnational past, or where do we get that kind of knowledge?
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment and take phone calls with Robert Wagoner. He'll even interpret your dreams if you want, but definitely ask a question too.